Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us Dr. Kevin Gazzara, the CEO of Magna Leadership Solutions and co-author of the bestseller, The Leader of Oz, revealing the 101 secrets of marvelous leadership for the 21st century.
The key message here is, for the listeners, is as a leader, if you can only do one thing in any culture is get better at communicating, connecting with others. And that's one of the key threads that we use through the book. And there, the other ones are, like I mentioned before, being authentic, you know, being competent, being confident, being visionary, empowering people. All of those, you know, doing reinforcement. These are part of the 10. And the other thing that we found was that if leaders try to do all of them at a 10 out of 10 level, they fail. You have to know which ones you need to leverage for your organizations.
Dr. Kevin Gazzara is currently the CEO of Magna Leadership Solutions. He's recognized as a management and leadership expert, an executive coach, and a speaker. Kevin has been a leadership professor for more than 25 years and has served as a doctoral chair for multiple universities. He worked for 18 years at Intel Corporation in positions from program and product management to leadership development and management of Intel University. Kevin holds a BS in commerce and engineering from Drexel University, an MBA from Philadelphia University, and a doctorate of management in organizational leadership from the University of Phoenix. Now, onto this hugely creative and entertaining episode with Dr. Kevin Gazzara. Kevin, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so glad that at a momentous time of this book going audio, I could actually connect with you and actually have you on the show. So, welcome.
Oh, it's so glad to be here. I've been excited about getting the book on audio for years. And we finally just bit the bullet and we decided we were going to do it. And I think it turned out great. You'll be able to see it on Audible and iTunes very, very shortly.
Wonderful. So before we get into the book, tell us a bit about you and the work you are doing, which sort of creates the backdrop for the book itself.
Sure. Well, my background is a very unusual background. It comes from a foundation of engineering. And then I moved into doing marketing and project management. I've worked at a couple different companies, mostly in industries for about 30 years or so. And then about 15 years ago, I left the corporate world. I had worked for Intel for 18 years. And I took two of my colleagues with me, one of those being the co-author of the book. He was a doctoral student of mine and became a good friend of mine, and we ultimately started a company together called Magna Leadership Solutions. So I do a lot of different things. Most of my time is spent doing executive coaching, leadership development for companies and organizations around the world. And then in my spare time, I'm a professor. I've been a professor at six universities, teaching mostly at the doctoral level or the master's level for leadership management, organizational behavior, business development, those kind of things.
Wonderful. Why did you think that in this sea of books on leadership, you had to write another one?
Well, I have to be really honest with you. When before we decided to leave the corporate world, I did my research. As you imagine, I'm a researcher. I did my research and I talked to about a dozen people that were doing consulting. And I asked them, you know, what do I need to do to leave the corporate world and be a successful consultant? And all of them told me the same thing, or generally the same thing, you know, if you had to look at it. And they said, you need five things. And one of the things that you need is you need a book, and you need a hardcover book to be able to hand to a CEO, whether they read it or not. It's just a completely different look and feel if you have a hardcover book that you can give them. So we, you know, why not go with the experts? And we went with the experts. And that was one of the main reasons we wanted to write a book. Plus, we wanted to really get our leadership philosophy, which is very academically based, but at the same time has, you know, 30 years of experience. And we tried to meld the two together in a very simple way so people would actually use it instead of it making it theoretical.
Great. So before we move on to the book, I have a quick question to you, because you not only did your research, you also helped many students over the years to do their research. How useful are these researches that people are doing all over the world? I mean, finally, leadership will boil down to a few core values or principles, I may say. How useful are these researches that are going on?
I would say the research, you know, that I've worked with, where I've been the chair for many doctoral students, as well as the research that I've done myself, I would say it's still very, very valuable. And one of the things that most people don't recognize who aren't in academia is that, yes, the basic tenets of leadership haven't really changed. Mm-hmm. They've been adjusted a little bit depending on because of the world situation, but the foundational pieces that you have to do with, you know, being authentic and a good communicator and, you know, having competence and confidence and all of those other attributes that we talk about in the book, those are all the same. The research that's happening at the moment, if you look at schools that are turning out doctoral graduates, you know, I think the real value is that in order to do a dissertation, you have to create something completely new and different, right? That's the one thing that I didn't even realize when I did my dissertation. I thought I could just go in and, you know, do a tweak of something else. And the answer is absolutely not. If it's been done before, they won't let you do it again. And I think the real value has been is that lots of the researchers right now are looking at very disparate topics that are being correlated, or things that you wouldn't have expected, you know. So looking at different people's attributes, you know, their behavioral attributes and how that affects their leadership styles, or it could be physical features or mental features or perspectives or backgrounds. So they take two things that have been researched independently, and to get your proposal approved, you have to say, I want to do a correlation between those two. And sometimes the data comes up and it's amazing. Kind of when I had done my dissertation looking at the relationship of task types to motivation, engagement, and flow, that I was pleasantly surprised that there was correlations. You know, the nice thing is you can do all your dissertation and you can show absolutely every hypothesis you have is not true, and you can still get a doctoral degree. But it's not a whole lot of value when you go out to the world. Fortunately, both myself and Dr. Lakhani, that we did the book with, our research turned out to have some really significant correlations.
This is great. So that brings me to the dissertations, which sort of form the basis of the book, right? Both of your dissertations.
Huh? Yes, absolutely.
So tell us about the story when you were heading from Sacramento to San Francisco, if I'm correct, and yes, and you sort of came up with this idea that it has to be synthesized into a cohesive story.
Yeah, you know, since both Dr. Lakhani and I are engineers in our undergraduate work, he is also a master statistician. You know, he's a Six Sigma black belt and a lean master and all those other things. He's got more titles than I'll ever be able to get. We were speaking at a conference. He lives in Sacramento, and we were speaking at a conference in San Francisco, and we just started our company. And as you can imagine, doing a startup, you don't have a lot of extra funds. So we were commuting back and forth for 2.5 hours to the conference that we were speaking at in San Francisco. And having 2.5 hours in a car each way, you know, for several days, you get to talk about a lot of topics. And we were working on outlining a book that was more academic. And we got to the point of the discussion where I just looked at Dr. Lakhani and said, Ali, I said, you know, are you excited about doing this? And he just kind of hesitated. He said, no. And I said, oh, good, because this is dreadful. I just don't want to write it. I said, why don't we just write something fun? Let's take, and what we discovered was that both of our favorite movies was The Wizard of Oz. And I said, that's it. Why don't we just write a book and we'll call it The Leader of Oz? And we both, and this was in the car on the way to San Francisco, and we both said, you know, there must have been 100 people that have written about this, and, you know, we probably can't do it. And we immediately went back home to Sacramento, where I was staying with Ali at his home, and we checked the Library of Congress, and sure enough, no one had ever done it. So we said, that's it, you know. And I said, it'll provide us a great structure, and then we can put all the good academic research that we've done for our dissertations and apply all the stuff that we learned at Intel and the other companies we worked with in the book and really help, you know, from a servant leadership model, really help struggling organizations and leaders in a very simple way. And our editor said, you have to write it at an 11th grade level. It can't be simplistic, but it should be simple.
Right.
So we wrote it in a way that high school kids could use it, and as well as CEOs, because it's practical. And like I said, it's grounded in really good, you know, years and years of academic research.
It's also surprisingly brief, I must say. Typically, these kinds of books will run to 300, 400 pages, and you kept it under 150 pages, which is commendable, right?
Yeah, well, not only is it under 150 pages, that when we designed the book, I said, you have to take the book and we have to be able to put it on a shelf in a bookstore, and people that are 50 or 60 or 70 years old, whatever, should be able to open it up without putting the reading glasses on the book. So we made it the type font a little bit larger, just because, you know, my experience of going in a bookstore and opening something where I have to go search for my glasses or whatever, I have a tendency to just put the book back. But we said, no, let's do that so you could read it even if you don't have reading glasses with you.
That's a nice touch. So before we actually start talking about the book, one last question. Both your dissertations sort of seem that it presented its own frameworks by themselves, right?
Yes.
So how did that, was it by accident or was it by design? And how did you put both of them together? I mean, they were not really a continued, I mean, sort of one was not the following the other. So you're literally two standalone, subjects or focus areas, and you sort of decided to fuse it. How did that come about?
Well, so Ali's dissertation was around leadership attributes as they related to business results and organizational performance. And he did it in a cross-cultural way. He looked at actually 70 different cultures around the world. So his dissertation provided the whole framework for us. And then within the book, you know, my dissertation focused on team development, motivation, and engagement. And as you know, good leaders, you know, that have these leadership, the 10 leadership attributes that Ali found in his research for that created great leaders, all of them were designed to develop teams, to keep people motivated and engaged, create this sense of flow and engagements. So I was able to use his larger structure, and the sub piece was really my research inside.
And you found the common grounds between the two as you looked at it.
We did, it was really a natural fit. There wasn't anything that was forced. It was surprising how everything flowed together. The Leader of Oz, the whole concept for those, I imagine most people have heard of the Wizard of Oz. You know, it's about this concept of someone, you know, just like in a corporation, you get kind of whisked into this new corporation, and things look different to you, and you have all these managers with different behaviors and different styles and types and so forth. And it was very much kind of like what Dorothy experienced with the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and you know, and so forth. So it created a great structure for us. And because people that read the book, we encourage people to watch the movie or read the book on the Wizard of Oz. That we don't have to spend, one of the other reasons it's shorter is you don't have to spend a lot of time on character development, because you know all of our characters sound just like, they're different characters, they sound like the characters, right? So for example, instead of using Dorothy, we use Dora. Instead of having the Cowardly Lion, we have Howard Lee Lion, right? So you know immediately. Yeah. You know, from your visual or your reading reference, what it's going to be.
Right, right. And why did you choose a story format? I know you have a view on this. Why did you choose a story format and not a straightforward, you know, leadership book? Okay, these are the 21 things that you should be doing.
I think for two reasons. One, people remember stories. Right. So and we really wanted people to read the book as opposed to buy the book, skim it and stick it on their shelves. Right. And when you do it in a story, if you've done it well, and I think we have done a really good job, the book does have a surprise ending in it. What we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure we had both just finished reading The Da Vinci Code. And I'm not saying this is the Da Vinci Code, by no means. We're not at Dan Brown's level. But the one thing that we love with the Da Vinci Code was that all the chapters were really short. There was a hook at the end of each chapter. And you just looked at the next chapter, it's like, oh, that's only 5 pages. You'll continue reading. So generally, most of the people that start reading it, read it at a single sitting. And we designed it so that you could read it in about, you know, an airplane flight, you know, for 2 to 2.5 hours or so. But because it's a story format, hopefully we've hooked you enough that you want to find out what happens.
This is great, because I don't know whether you know, Dan Brown did a masterclass on how to write thrillers.
I know that.
And he told exactly what you just said, that have a hook at the ends, which makes them read the next chapter. That's a great one. Okay, let's move on to the book. How did you sort of structure, what was the process? You had this conference, you had this discussion, you zeroed in on the Leader of Oz as a title and an approach. What did you do next? You have these two theses you have, and you have this idea. What did you do next?
Well, the first thing we did is we got the movie script, and we printed it out, right? And then we looked at natural breakpoints in the script, and then Ali and I took that information and we said, what are the tools from his dissertation around the 10 leadership competencies that we have to focus on in each one of the scene changes in order to allow it to flow, right? So it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle, right? That you want to put it all together, and it has to fit naturally. And the interesting thing is, it was very relatively easy to do. You know, you start up front with finding yourself, being authentic, and then you have to figure out ways to communicate well, and then you have to develop competence, and all of these just fell kind of in sequence, and it allowed us to kind of focus on the different competencies in each of the chapters. So it was really pretty easy. I think what might be interesting to your readers is that the way we wrote it was that Ali wrote one chapter and I wrote the next. Right, there's I think 21 chapters in the book.
Yes.
So we each did about 10 or 11 chapters. He would be working on chapter one. I'd be working on chapter two simultaneously because we committed to have it ready for a conference. The best way to write a book is to say you have to have it on this date in order to go. Right. Mm-hmm. So we committed to doing it, and it took us probably about 6 months, start to finish, from the concept to actually getting the, you know, the first 1,500 of those ending up in the big giant boxes in our garages. The thing for us was that we wrote it. Ali is a much more technical writer, and I'm much more of a creative writer. So we have two different voices. So what we would do is we would agree at where the hook was, and we would agree at the transition, and then we would begin. And, you know, we'd each take about 2 or 3 days a chapter. We'd write those, we'd send it back, and then we'd take 2 days to edit it. And I would add my voice, the creative voice, and he would add the technical voice. So when you're reading the book, and I've asked a lot of people, does it sound like two authors? And no one has said that it sounds like two authors. So I think we did a good job. Plus, we had an awesome editor, you know, that kind of made it flow. And she did a great job of telling us, you know, you've got eight pages here, and it has 4 pages of content. You need to lose 4 pages. You know, so she got it to make sure that it was really concise.
It's time for a short break. Kevin just described the entire process of how he and his co-author, Dr. Murtaza Ali Lakhani, shared the writing of the book. As we come back, we will dive into some of the interesting chapters to see how the ideas played out. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. As we went into the break, I asked Kevin to walk us through some of the important chapters of the book. Let's dive in. Let's walk through the book, a few of the chapters that you are, you know, excited about. What would they be? I mean, we could talk about the first one where you say there's no place like home. That's the discovery chapter, right?
That's the discovery chapter, and kind of it's setting the backstory. And you know, and I haven't really thought about this, but I'm not sure I have any kind of favorite chapters. I think if you read the chapter titles, I think what you'll find is that they are really much more aligned. They may sound like business chapters, but you can see that they are really aligned well with the script. Right? There's right. No place like home. The terrible twister. Right, yeah. We're not in Kansas anymore. So all of those were, if you were to print out the script, which is available online, you print out the script of the movie, you would see that those are really the key transition points that Ali and I made sure that we had the content to fill.
Right. So let's talk about the 10 attributes that you talk of primarily in the book.
Well, the 10 attributes. So what Ali had done when he did his doctoral dissertation, he looked at the top 10 leadership assessments, right? Mm-hmm. So there's ones by Daniel Goleman and Zenger, Bass. There's a whole bunch of classical leadership assessments that have existed for forever. And what he found was, is he did a meta-analysis, and what he recognized that many of them had common attributes, but most of them were missing some. In particular, most really did not address organizational or national culture, right? That they looked at leaders strictly independent of the cultures that they were in, either from a company culture or from a national culture of, you know, whether it was in India, in the US or Canada or Europe or whatever, that they didn't really look at that. And that's what he wanted to show, that there was correlation, that if you're leading in India, you have to lead completely different than if you're leading in Ireland or in the United States and so forth. And that's where he came up with these 10 leadership practices or principles, or what is commonly known as competencies. You know, and some of the, probably the ones that are the most prevalent, the number one that shows up in every culture is communication. If you, the key message here is for the listeners is, as a leader, if you can only do one thing in any culture, is get better at communicating, connecting with others. And that's one of the key threads that we use through the book. And there, the other ones are, like I mentioned before, being authentic, you know, being competent, being confident, being visionary, empowering people, all of those, you know, doing reinforcement. These are part of the 10. And the other thing that we found was that if leaders try to do all of them at a 10 out of 10 level, they fail. You have to know which ones you need to leverage for your organizations.
Let's dwell a little bit on the communication piece, because I think that's the most difficult thing. I mean, forget about leaders. I mean, leaders, business leaders, any leader, right?
Right.
Any leadership, I think, and we all believe that, for example, I believe that because I'm speaking the same language, you are getting exactly what I'm trying to say. But we both know it's far from the truth, right? We try to be accurate. We try to choose the best words. Communication is a fundamental problem in the world.
It is, absolutely, right. And and when we have something in our firm that we do for companies or organizations around the world called our Leading Forward Academy, and it's a 6-month program that we do. In fact, I just finished teaching half hour ago in Shanghai. Right, it's Shanghai tomorrow morning. I'm teaching it in Amsterdam, so I'm not getting a lot of sleep these days. But that's a good thing. And to address the communication challenges, a few things that we've learned with communication that I'll share with the listeners or viewers here, regardless of whether you get the book or not. That one of the things that we teach in our Leadership Academy, in particular, and it's in the book as well, is that to be a great communicator, you have to make sure that people are taking your communications as an opportunity and not a threat. That our brains are digital, and when you're listening to me, you're either listening to me and you're saying, here's an opportunity, I can learn from this, I want to hear what he has to say, or it can be taken as a threat where you're thinking, where you're processing of, oh, that's not true, or how could somebody of that culture or that background say that? He can't say that, right? So our brains go off and try to parallel process, but our brains are serial devices. So we can't do that. So the best leaders are always communicating in a way that people are looking at it as an opportunity. And also the other thing is the best leaders really take a servant leadership perspective. And that's really kind of the foundation of the book. The servant leadership really means that it's all about the other side of the communication, that I am here as a leader to help to really build more leaders. That's what the best leaders recognize. It's not about building themselves. It's about building more leaders. And if they can do that, you know, generally they're, if you look at some of the best leaders in the world, right, or the most famous leaders, they are really about their followers more than anything else.
That's interesting, because the other thing that comes to my mind is that some of the best communicators were also the best listeners. And that's how you sort of plug into the other side, right?
Yes. Right. What, not only are they great listeners, they are, they're watching for both the verbal and the visual cues, right? That they're doing real-time interpretation and they're not just listening to the words, right? Because the thing is, it's the best leaders understand the importance of delivery, right? So I can say to you, I'm really happy about being here on the podcast tonight. And all of those words are, if you just saw them written down, you would say, this is great. He's excited. The thing is the best leaders are, as you point out so astutely, is they're reading the tone, the pattern, the pitch, the cadence. All of that is telling a very, very different message. And even though the words are there, if the delivery is not there, you are viewed as a terrible leader, even though from a rational perspective, everything, there wasn't a single word in that statement that wasn't positive.
So when people read this book or listen to the book, when the audio version comes out, what is the outcome that they can expect?
Great question. Both Ali and I love business parables, you know, and some of the early business parable books were like Who Moved My Cheese and The Iceberg Is Melted and The 1 Minute Manager. And we love those stories. We love the concept, as I mentioned before, with Dan Brown about having the hook. But the one thing that we found was that the parables were interesting, yet when you were done, it kind of left you blank of like, okay, so now what do we do? So what we did is at the end of each of the chapters, we have what we call marvelous leadership secrets. And when you read the book, you'll understand why we use the word marvelous. And there's 100 of them, or it's actually 101 of them. And what we tried to do is we tried to give people actionable items at the end of each chapter for what was demonstrated in the chapter. So you can we don't want you just reading, you know, the 101 single lines. We want you to read the chapter so you can see how those are demonstrated. But at the end of each chapter, there's these 5 to 6 elements, and we ask you to check through them. At the end of the book, there's a table or a rubric, whatever you want to call it. And we say, take the ones that you've checked and put them in here, and it will give you an idea of the kind of leader you are, right? It'll tell you, do you lead more like Dorothy or the Cowardly Lion or the Tin Man or the Scarecrow, and so forth, right? So the idea is we wanted to make it practical, and we wanted to have people to be a little reflective of what they were doing.
So what has been the feedback? Because this book has been out there for a while and you have been teaching, you have been training. So I presume a lot of your students, a lot of people who go through your workshops are reading this book, right?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, we have a whole workshop that as part of the Leadership Academy, we close with it because this is a good wrap up for us to bring everything together. Yeah. So we'll be going on our third printing of the book. Right. Right. So it's been good. I think the general feedback, if you go on Amazon, there's quite a few reviews there. Hmm. But if you go on Amazon and look, the general feedback is easy to read, practical, fun, resonated with me. You know, particularly women leaders, right? Hmm. Because the main characters are Dorothy and Glinda, right? In the book, and so. So it's really, so from a women's leadership perspective, it's really a good demonstration for young women as well. I mean, it can be for any leader, but the story is, you know, female based.
Did you ever consider actually doing a research with your readers and folks that have gone through that portion of the workshop as to how many of them have actually implemented some of these ideas and seen how they have sort of transformed as leaders themselves? Have you thought about it at all?
Actually, we have a tool, and it's not so much just on the book. it's really on our whole process, because we've moved away from the one and done type of thing, because that kind of teaching and learning doesn't stick, right? You can't just go to a workshop and be done. Yeah. So we've designed a process, and one of the tools that we use that we developed and hired a programmer to develop for us and we use in all of our programs is a tool called SHIFT. Mm-hmm. It stands for Stakeholder Instant Feedback. And what we have them do is we have people create their questions. It's completely automated. It's very quick to do, 2 or 3 minutes, all Likert scale. And what we do is they start out with a baseline, and we teach them all of the different attributes, communication, motivation, authenticity, so forth, all the kind of foundational things that Ali found it from his research in the program. And the SHIFT tool, on a bi-weekly basis, every other week, tracks whether they're making progress or not. And we've shown over and over and over again to the organizations that hire us to do the programs for them that we can really push the needle with quantitative information. I think it's so important, because a lot of things today are you go to a class and it's a lot of fun and so forth, but it never gets implemented. We said, hey, let's show you that people are actually, pushing, their 2.5 out of 5 rating on communication to 4 or 5.
Interesting. And do you have sort of some inbuilt nudges for people to actually sort of be guided or tapped towards the right direction?
Also, another good question. And yes, what we do is we do weekly, we do what we call reinforcement messages.
Right.
So these are, I think, as the nudges, right? So that you get a basic set of content. We create this peer organization, so you're learning together and you're holding each other accountable. We call them capability partners rather than accountability partners.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you get these nudges once a week. There's an action item. Doesn't add any additional work to your day. It's supposed to be, here's something you would normally do, and here's a way to do it that we think will be better. And then the SHIFT tool tracks all of, when you're putting that all together, are they making progress? And I'm really happy to say that we haven't had a single organization yet that hasn't pushed the needle. Now, is it for 100% of the managers? No, right? If the managers don't do the work, the needle doesn't move. But the thing is if it doesn't move, you get a chance, since it's quantitative, you get a chance to have a discussion with them
of
what's going on here.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Kevin, thank you so much for making time between sleepless nights and missed flights. this was a delightful discussion. And I'm now very motivated to actually go and read the book. And I'm sure people who are listening would do the same.
Good. Well, I hope when you read the book or you listen to the book, we had got a great voiceover artist. I think she did an awesome, awesome job. People would say, well, why didn't you and Ali do that? Well, it's mostly female voices, and we wanted to find someone that really kind of had kind of a Judy Garland type of feel. Hmm. She doesn't sing at all, but you can certainly hear her conviction to it. So enjoy the read or the listen.
Totally looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books with Melissa Madian, Brad Jevons, Peter Kohan, Park Howell, Shakti Likha, and Julie Hansen, with great conversations about wonderful books. We also have a lineup of Listener's Choice episodes featuring Thomas Williams and more.
subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.